So I will build on what John has said. David introduced this meeting by saying there's a lot going on in fusion, and fusion is not necessarily always mañana, forever away. And there is also a lot of change going on in fusion. So I thought I'd just pick up on what some of that change is. So in the top right-hand side here, you see, oh, left-hand side. It's the same, isn't it, on both ways? You see NIF. So this is the National Ignition Facility in the US, who in 2022 announced that they had achieved real fusion power with a net thermal gain. So you get more thermal power out than put in. And that's a huge step for fusion, a really, really big step. In the middle, you see JET, the Joint European Torus that we host here in the UK, the largest fusion facility in the world, where we have successively broken our own world record a number of times over the last 3 years. Setting a final world record at 69 megajoules over about 5 seconds. Now, that's sort of 10 or 11 megawatts for 5 seconds. Doesn't sound hugely impressive. But the really important part of those experiments were that they overlaid exactly what we predicted would happen. And that means we have confidence in our predictions as we now move ahead to big experiments, like the one that you see at the bottom of the picture here, which is ITER. For those of you that don't know, ITER is the largest scientific collaboration ever undertaken by humanity. It's a huge project in every sense, both footprint, price, timescale, geopolitical complexity, and in my view, impact. If ITER works and produces a very significant net power gain, where we'll put 50 megawatts of thermal power in and produce 500 megawatts of fusion power outwards, that really demonstrates that you can do fusion on commercial scale. And ITER is now largely built, right? So most of the components of ITER have been built. And many of those components are, ridiculously complicated. At the start of the project, we didn't have supply chains for them. We didn't really think they could be built, and they now exist. So many first of a kind, so many world firsts involved in that project, which has led to, frankly, a whole new industry. And we're delighted to see big energy companies, big engineering firms have been implicitly involved in ITER the whole way through. Whilst it is a big global project, UK companies have been heavily involved in that. 650 million worth of contracts have come into the UK supply chain. A UK company leads the construction management as agent. A UK company led the architect engineer. So those are the core contracts for actually the assembly and the build of ITER. So it has been a complete change in the fusion landscape. We are now doing things at power plant scale, and we are beginning to have industrial competence to do that. But we are no longer in ITER. We are not in the Euratom Research and Training Program. And JET in the middle ceased operation at the end of last year. So a time of much change. However, as John said, we are very lucky that the UK genuinely has a unique competence in fusion that you cannot find anywhere else. As John said, that's multifaceted. So it goes from our national lab, UKAEA, which is the largest fusion organization in the world at the moment. And I often say that, I will feel that we have succeeded when we are no longer the largest fusion organization in the world, but actually that is in the private sector. We have that, a lot of that competence is born from JET, so at the top here, but we are also the first people to build a spherical tokamak, and we think spherical tokamaks offer huge potential for minimizing cost and therefore maximizing commercial viability of fusion power plants. The first ever in the UK, the best in the world currently in the UK. We have also developed competence in all the enabling technologies that you need for fusion. So be that the materials, which have to withstand a pretty unfavoring environment with the most intense neutron source on the planet and huge heat gradients to deal with. How you manufacture and test and qualify those materials, how you maintain the inside of the machine, which is, again, a place you can't send people, so you have to do robotically. How you fuel the facility, which means that we have to make our own tritium. Tritium, very short half-life. There's no natural tritium left. You have to make it. So understanding how you store, process, and fuel the machine with tritium is key. And you need to stitch all of that together with some pretty complex advanced computing. And we do all of those things in the UK. And that enables us to do the things at the bottom. So we have really stimulated our supply base. We have invested heavily in skills and will continue to do so with the government support. We're thinking very hard about technology transfer into fusion from other adjacent industries and also out of fusion. and many examples of that over the last few years. And we're stimulating the competence to build power plants. And that's multifaceted. So it goes from having a national endeavour to build a prototype power plant, behind which will come, we hope, very large engineering and energy firms. And you'll hear from Francesca later, who represents one of those. At the same time as investing in industry programs which stimulate SMEs and stimulate new technology and stimulate innovation in the sector. And John pointed to Tokamak Energy and First Light Fusion, but there are a number of other startup companies as well in fusion and adjacent technologies being born in the UK, which is really good to see. I'll skip that because you already talked about it. This is genuinely a national endeavour. We see now fusion is not just Culham. It is really all over the country. UKAEA, as the national lab, now has 4 sites. We have university partners in 35 different universities. And we set up a fusion cluster of like-minded industry partners 2 years ago. We expected we might have a dozen, maybe 24 if we were lucky. We had 205 without really trying. So there are lots and lots of partners now working in fusion. We have actually 4,000 companies contracted and working in fusion at the moment, which is certainly more than an order of magnitude from a few years ago. I mentioned the spherical tokamak and the potential that it has. Let me show you just one little bit of science, because I think it's important to show some science. One of the big hindrances to the spherical tokamak, what we're trying to do is make the power plant as compact as possible. If you look at ITER, so the big international experiment I talked about a third of the money goes in very large buildings. And about a third of the money goes on some very large magnets with the largest cryogenics plant in the world to cool those magnets. And that's where all the money really goes. So if you can use smaller magnets because you design the magnetic geometry more efficiently and therefore put them in a much smaller building, you can strip out billions of cost. I mean, really billions of overnight cost. This was the premise that the UK, I mean, much smarter people than me, came up with this idea way back in the 80s. We built the first one of these ever in the 90s. We showed it was far more efficient than alternative ways of approaching fusion. But the boundary condition for fusion is that it has to, the fuel has to be 100 million degrees or it doesn't fuse. If you now take that sort of heat source and put it into a much smaller volume, the chances of melting the walls of your box are obviously a lot higher. So the rest of the world never really invested in spherical tokamaks. As they said, this is probably a dead end. You'll never be able to cope with the heat. And we said, we agree. If we don't find a solution for how to extract the heat, then this is a dead end. So we need to find a way of extracting the heat. So we built this machine called Mast Upgrade. I was deeply proud that this was the winner of the Royal Academy of Engineering's Major Projects Prize a couple of years ago. The first time, by the way, ever a public project had won that. And this was what we were attempting to do. So the red line here is the conventional way of extracting heat from any fusion power plant, any magnetically confined fusion power plant, where you see a lot of heat, so a very high heat density in a narrow area. We said we think we can do it like the blue line here. So reduce the peak heat flux, which gets to the wall, by a factor of 10. And actually, in any industry that you work in, if you're 10 times better than your competitor, you have a major, major market advantage. So that's what we said we would do. We published that in open literature. More than 10 years ago. And I must admit, I don't think everybody in the community thought we would achieve that, me included at times. And then we turned on our facility in 2021, and these were our first results. And if you want to see experiment match modeling, you could do worse, right? So this tells me two things. It works. It really does work. And two, our models are at least reasonably representative of what happens in the real world. And that gave us confidence to move ahead, as John described, with the spherical tokamak for energy production. So a prototype power plant program aiming to produce net energy and to minimize the capital costs. Frankly, the UK is just not big enough in the energy market to do volume. We will never have a product which becomes cheapest by doing volume. We have to have a product which is innovative and therefore becomes cheaper than our competitors by being cleverer. That is always going to be our value proposition. And that's what we think the spherical tokamak offers. So our high-level program on this, we have now been about 5 years in concept design phase, and that's really a pre-concept design phase, where we've said we would mature the design. We'd establish a regulatory framework. As John said, we passed legislation for that last year, so that's done. We choose a site, and I'll talk about that in a second, and we would set up a company to operate this. We are a national lab. We don't build infrastructure, so we need to work with partners to do that. Then we go into the detailed engineering design phase. We start some of the long-lead procurement. We start the site development. The main construction happens over the 2030s, and we are aiming to complete the build by 2040. So this is both simultaneously a depressingly long time scale and also a hugely audacious time scale. It's both of those things at the same time. The site that we chose after a two-year process with 15 nominations, which really went top to bottom, east to west, we down selected to five on the shortlist and then chose this site. As John said, it, until March last year, was a coal power station operated by EDF. This is the tagline of the proponent, so I can't claim it's my own, but this is a story of fossils to fusion, which is a great tagline. And there's lots to like about the site. So it has a train line, it has a direct connection to our national grid, no new pylons, no new substations. It has a 2 gigawatt abstraction license of water from the Trent. It has millions of people living in the local environs at less than an hour away. And it has a population who their whole lives have been involved in power generation. 3 miles down the river is another gigawatt power station. 3 miles down the river is another gigawatt power station. So that whole area has been driven by power generation, and they want new power projects. This is, by the way, the only, in the whole world, the only fusion power plant project that actually has a site and is actually getting on with preparing that site. And I thought I'd show you a little video, because who doesn't like seeing things being blown up by dynamite? So this is that coal power station. As I say, we're about a year through now, and it's coming down. We're just getting on with developing the site and actually preparing the way that we can get on with building a fusion power plant and benefit from all the power infrastructure that is already there. So that is actually, we're just quietly, in our British way, going about getting on with things. There's no sound on that video. It's quiet. We also are setting up a public-private partnership in a slightly different way to many other countries in the world, where many other countries in the world are stimulating SMEs by investing in them and working together with the state, but are not working on power plant programs. We're doing both. So we have an industry program which is about stimulating innovation and working with SMEs, but we also have a national endeavor which is about building a power plant. The first thing that we will do once we've set up this new company, UK Industrial Fusion Solutions, which actually begins trading next week, 1st of April, is to contract two partners. So an engineering partner and a construction partner who will be with us on that 20-year journey to build a prototype. And our aspiration is that, having done that, they then have the competence, not just having built a prototype, but they then go and build three power stations, and then they go and build 10 power stations, and then they can go and build 50 power stations. And this is huge export potential for the UK, not just having a design of a power plant, but enabling the whole supply chain in the critical technologies which are required for fusion. You go back to my first slide, in tritium, in materials, in robotics, in manufacturing. And then the last ingredient is people. As John said, we're working very hard on training the next generation of people. The government have invested heavily in apprentice training centres. We opened this in 2019. So what was that? 5 years ago, we had 10 learners. Today, we have 460. We're training learners for 35 different organisations, and we will be doing 1,000 a year in 3 years' time. So that is already committed by the government. That's great. And we want to do the same at not just apprentice level, but at graduate level, a PhD level, a postdoc level. And there is a £55 million investment from the government to do that. So you're really seeing a proper coherent plan here, a national strategy backed by a power plant program, which is crowding in big energy companies. At the same time, investment in the SMEs and innovation program, investment in research, which keeps us at the cutting edge, investment in skills, investment in the campus and clustering and bringing together everybody at one site. It's a really coherent, holistic strategy for which our government is famed. Sorry, you turn that into a joke. I was being genuine. So I'll conclude there. Some really big advances in the last couple of years, broken the world record many times, setting up new facilities across all of the enabling technology that you need for fusion, clustering people together with strong campus growth, and we're seeing proper inward investment into this country on the hundreds of millions scale. STEP is progressing perfectly on track. All the things we said we'd do in the first phase, I'm delighted to say we have done, which is very good. And we are seeing proper collaboration with industry on the scale of thousands of companies now involved in fusion that just was not the case 5 years ago. And we hope that continues to increase, notably as we now procure partners to move forward with the STEP program with us. Thank you.